So here's the plan for the new Leuphana Arts Program. This is also what has already been published, so for those of you who've read the documents, this is not going to be new. Over the next years, the university will create the Leuphana Arts Program, short LAP, and it has three main goals of supporting artists, of creating a dialogue between art and science, and giving impulses for innovation in teaching. Oh, we can switch this thing back on now. The Leuphana Arts Program wants to prove that a successful cooperation between the arts and the sciences need not be merely incidental, because there are many incidents in the last at least 50 years where things have worked out, so that it not be merely incidental, but that it can actually work sustainably. This is the hypothesis. I'm not sure whether that's actually true, but it would be interesting to see whether it is actually possible. The program provides a framework for the mutual stimulation and support of artistic and scientific forms of thinking and working, and will develop the required institutional, organizational, and communicative models. As a pilot phase, the Leuphana Arts Program will launch a program of artist residencies slated to start next April 2012. In a first step, around 6 artists will be invited to Leuphana per year. Their work can enter into a dialogue with the Leuphana faculties. Imagine, for instance, the faculties of sustainability or of cultural and media studies. And later, this dialogue will be extended to partner institutions beyond the university. The residency program supports artistic research and the development of artistic projects, especially while they are in their research phase. So we are not so much about finishing whatever installation or artistic project work, but it's really about the research phase. I think that's where the university can do most, but that's one of the first questions that I would have to those who have worked in the field, whether that's actually true. The program enables a lively interdisciplinary dialogue with scientists and researchers of the university, and the word lively indicates that this is from a text that I wrote to prove that it's worth spending the money on. Practically speaking, international artists will be invited to the LAP as resident artists, usually for 1 year. As a preparation, they will provide a project concept which allows for efficiently and imaginatively connecting them to the most fitting university researchers. As resident artists, they spend at least 3 1-week research stays at Leuphana University during that year, in whose context they will do an introductory and a closing presentation, as well as conduct interdisciplinary dialogues. So there is a relatively low residence obligation for the resident artists, but of course we will suggest and try to entice them to want to spend much more time here at the university. Besides the artistic program, the Leuphana Arts Program will, in a future step, possibly starting in 2013, offer courses in the field of professional and postgraduate education. These courses will be conceived and developed gradually and in conjunction with the responsible university bodies and faculties. They are specific courses which are based on artistic concepts. Whenever appropriate, they will be coupled with the teaching program of the respective university faculties. So importantly, the Leuphana Arts Program is an experimental program for supporting artistic work in a university setting. One of my questions for the symposium is what's the best way to develop the dialogue that we want to happen between the university and the artists who come in as outsiders, if you like. And then, of course, also understanding the conditions under which such encounters take place and how those conditions change, how they may be different in different places and need to be adapted or adapted to. I want to briefly just mention a few art programs at universities that can serve as reference points about what we want to do and what we don't want to do. I'm not going to go deeply into the analysis of these different places. I think that some of them are really interesting to look at carefully. We have some examples that you are going to speak about, which are exemplary in their own right. The Swiss Artists in Labs program that Irin Hediger is going to speak about is one of those programs which are seminal for our thinking as well, as is the Kunstraum that Ulf Wuggenig is going to speak about here at the University in Lüneburg. An important program in this field is, of course, the MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's program in Art, Culture and Technology, ACT, which has the famous ancestor of the Center for Advanced Visual Studies, CAVS, which was founded in, 1967, by Györgyi Kerpes, and has been one of the first concerted efforts to bring artistic knowledge into a technical university. So it's been very seminal also for the whole field of thinking through the role of art within technological developments and kind of enticing artists to work with new technologies. Now the ACT program is very much focused on teaching, as far as I can see, but they bring in a lot of external artists to feed the university program. There's the arts program at the Zeppelin University in Friedrichshafen, which is a lively program of exhibitions, of artist visits. They commission artworks and are inserting art in quite a variety of ways into the university life. The Catholic University of Leuven and the University in Wittenherdecke both have artist-in-residence programs, relatively limited in terms of the scope, but they create a presence of artists at the university on a continuous level. Then, interesting for the more conceptual discussions that we may have is the new graduate school for the sciences and the arts, or the arts and the sciences, at the UdK in Berlin, because there is a graduate school where they're bringing artists and researchers together and not asking the artists to do PhDs, but to reflect on their artistic practice in a university context. And what the artists are getting are not PhD certificates, but just a certificate that they they've participated in this school, and that kind of already points us in the direction of the whole discussion around artistic research and how artistic practice can be evaluated as academic research. A question which is for me not central in my work at the moment, because we're not bringing the artists here to gain academic merit, but we're bringing them here so that they can pursue their artistic work. Our colleagues at the art academies, they have that problem, or they, for them it's that question. But then in the next step, when we think about the epistemological role of the arts in society, then it may very well be that if the definition of what constitutes knowledge today is changed, then it might come as a natural result that artistic work is actually seen as something that is as valid as other forms of knowledge creation. And I think that those kinds of questions are really central to what the colleagues are doing in Berlin. And then I just wanted to point to possibly the earliest European program for this field of artistic research, and that's the UFR des Arts Plastiques et Sciences de l'Art, which was founded by Bernard Tessèdre in 1970 at the Sorbonne in Paris. I was in contact with Anne-Marie Duguay, who has been part of that group for many years, and she couldn't come and said that Tessèdre is probably, he's 80 and wouldn't travel, but it might be interesting to look at their work to learn something. Sally, you're looking as though you know something about them. Maybe you can fill that in.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to explore the different structures, the frameworks, premises, the values.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Because from my experience, I don't know Paris 1 hugely well, although I know Anne-Marie very well. But I think that you would have to point to a few flag bearers, and there aren't many of them, like Xenakis.
Mm.
I don't know how many one could count. I suspect it's on the fingers of one hand. People whose artistic trajectories have been genuinely and deeply embedded in scientific trajectories.
Mm. There are some new examples right now. I mean, being based in Paris and incidentally teaching at Sorbonne in Paris. I mean, they hired some new staff right now.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a kind of renewal, especially when it comes to life science.
Yeah, I'm thinking in terms of the existing legacy.
Yes.
What you're talking about is very interesting because it's the emergence
yes.
of new practices that are trying to come back to perhaps the sort of thing that Alliage was symbolic of.
Mm.
But I think between 1970 and the wonderful aspirations and what is actually now being capitalized on as a legacy for new work, there's actually there's a big kind of gap.
Yeah. Mm.
But it's good to discuss it.
And on the list to discuss, what would be very interesting from at least my point of view would have a discussion with the possibilities of interfaces between the formal kind of university organization structure, for instance in your land, and the possibilities of doing this kind of diploma thing we're speaking about in Berlin. I mean, the history of the of that kind of development is also very interesting, but this touches upon it.
Mm.
State regulation,
yeah,
which is sort of a key thing for
yeah.
us, in the
yeah.
practice based. And I imagine it's different in the Northern European than in the UK.
Well, sorry, just cut me off, Andreas, if that I should be saving this, but I think it's nice to
And for those
to be
of you who can't hear properly, you just have to come closer.
And
slow me down. My voice carries, but you know, some of the others are not, then you just have to come close, and I need the projector for a little while. So
I was thinking, Pierre, to come back to this question of validation of trajectories that are not necessarily PhD, crowned by PhDs. Of course, the Norwegian Arts Research Fellowship Programme, in which I've been very involved over the years, which is the producer of sensuous knowledge as opposed to scientific knowledge constructs.
How do you call it?
Norwegian Arts Research Fellowship Programme. It's a national programme which hires on a fairly respectable salary artists for 3 years, and their obligation is to teach within the different Norwegian academies and to finally submit artistic work with a fairly deep contextualization. But they are not submitting for a PhD, they are submitting for validation of their status as arts research fellows. And that gives them a bridge into future teaching at a higher level.
That's very important.
And it's I think it's a very valuable and.
Say that again. What is it that
they are? The Norwegian Arts Research Fellowship Programme was set up precisely to allow artists to be more formally engaged in the teaching and to improve the quality of the arts teaching in Norwegian art schools, essentially. Whether it's the Norwegian, the Sibelius Academy in Oslo, or KIB, which is the arts academy in Bergen. And so for 3 years, they are paid a very good salary, they have good working conditions, and they, at the end of the 3 years, must submit for a viva, a very formal viva. It's certainly equivalent in rigor to a PhD viva, but they have to submit their work with full contextualization. And they are not submitting for a PhD with academic criteria. They are submitting artistic outputs as such for criteria that are to do with, I have to try and remember, there's obviously the originality notion that you get in most systems. There's the reflective component. They have to show that they have been capable of good self-reflection, self-monitoring, self-evaluation. So that is also, has also to do with communicability. They have to be capable of articulating their research processes in ways that can be useful for the broader community. But they're not judged on academic criteria. And some of them pass and some of them fail, and I've been involved in both situations, which are very interesting. But the Norwegians have adamantly said they have PhDs for artists. Stahl Stensli has a PhD from the University of Oslo, but they want to do something different, which is to create a research program for artists that isn't subservient to PhD academic criteria. So it's a very unusual model. The Norwegians are quite original thinkers. They have the resources to be original thinkers,
yes,
too.
The oil and the gas.
Yeah, but they invested it intelligently, and I think they're making intelligent cognitive investments.
Yes. No, I'm not against that. It's just good to keep in mind.
I don't know if we should go on with this discussion.
No, I think it's that this conversation is why we're here.
Okay, but an interesting thing, of course, which we could try to find out or discuss is to what extent this is a paradigmatic problem, sort of doing research in another way, being an artist and doing research, in, or whether it's a smart and intelligent way of getting people in. despite the formalities, because I mean, what we have in the practice-based thing is of course that we can do practice-based thesis, provided the artists have a Grundschein, they have a diploma somewhere from, but if you lack this diploma, the career is blocked. So you have to get, so this seems to be a very, very interesting way of circumnavigating this, so to speak. And then the discussion about the paradigm and so on that comes is very important, but it is not the basic problem.
I think it's subject to a lot of the conflicts that we will probably discuss over the next day and a half, because some of the people driving the programme do see it as a way of ultimately moving towards a Bologna-type accreditation, which would mean turning this artistic research fellow final qualification into something that is of a PhD kind. So there are some of those tensions inherent to the system. But the other thing that's interesting about it is that it recruits internationally. So Michel Terrain, for example, is currently on an arts fellowship, arts research fellowship program, because this is the bit, and she's living in Berlin most of the time, but she's in Bergen some of the time on this program, because this is the best context for her to do her artwork. She doesn't feel that she's being compromised by having a PhD chain around her neck. So
yeah, some of the artists are really suffering.
Yeah, but then you have the imperative from universities, which is very problematic as well, for artists only to be employed or recruited if they are holders of PhDs. And some of these are extremely poor. I'm sorry, I'm going to be polemical, but I think there are some disgustingly bad PhDs which are giving artists inroads to universities, and some excellent researchers and teachers who are being denied access because they don't have this silly bit of paper, which should be a good bit of paper, and it can be, but some other problem. Oh, shut up.
Then there are a number of explicitly art and science, as in mostly natural science related programs that I just want to mention. We have a terminological issue, because when in German we say Wissenschaft, then we mean something very general, and it's like a higher calling to generating and circulating and questioning knowledge. Whereas science, from my understanding of the English language, can be both this, but it's also more focused on the so-called natural sciences. So when I say the sciences, then some of you will immediately think, oh, this must be the natural sciences that he's now talking about. And I think that in our conversation we have to somehow make sure that we are clear about what we are referencing, whether we say the sciences and the humanities, or I don't know.
Why are you saying natural to the exclusion of all the other sciences? What are you calling them? No, I'm talking about or also without going to humanities, physics or astronomy or maths as hard science.
Geisteswissenschaften oder Wissenschaften, oder?
Ja, aber warum Wissenschaft ist das nur natural science?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just pointing to the fact that
there is
kind of the
convention,
deep split between the sciences and the humanities. And I thought that that was an issue. If you're saying it's not an issue,
it was a Germanism. Germanism. We say Naturwissenschaft to what in English is called science.
Okay, Naturwissenschaft. Okay.
Yes.
So when you say Wissenschaft, you are actually thinking Naturwissenschaft.
No. When I say, I'm trying to hold on to a broad understanding of the sciences, including the social sciences, and including something like philosophy.
Yeah.
But this is doesn't come naturally, and the this is where, why I'm mentioning it at this point in my presentation. The art and science programs that are run by these universities, they look at the hard sciences, or, you know, they deal with the physical world most of the time, and they explicitly do not deal with the social sciences or the humanities. So that some of the discussion about the relation between art and science is focused on the relation that artists have with those physical sciences. And for my thinking, the interesting question is, how does the place that I bring artists into here at the university change when I move from economics to sustainability to media studies to art history. Because, you know, sometimes when our colleagues in the art academies have this discussion about art and science, they only speak about the cultural studies, cultural sciences, as their field of reference. They don't even think about the physical sciences. So I'm just pointing to the fact that there's an issue about what field of scientific research are we actually referencing when we speak about these relations. And I'm going to suggest that we have to be very specific when we speak about these things. That's why, you know, your intervention about the Norwegian program is, for me, very interesting, because it describes a particular instance. And I'm afraid that we may have to speak about individual artistic practices and individual scientific practices in great detail. I think that Irina will be able to sing a song about that. So just to go through these very quickly, there's the Art Sci Center and Lab at UCLA. For those of you who are interested in these things, I can easily make them available. I have them on a wiki page all collected, and I can give you the URLs and everything. Yeah, Bita?
One question, you said the only reference point is cultural studies, but there is also a definition point, Kulturwissenschaften, cultural studies.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's also Kulturwissenschaften, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
It's more cultural science. Okay.
Yes. And the Art Sci Center and Lab is really like a platform, as I understand it, a platform for artists and researchers from the different scientific fields to meet and present their work to each other. It's a program more than an institution. I haven't been there. Maybe some of you have an experience with them, as with the other programs. And I'm just describing the models at the moment. So this is really a place where artists and scientists, researchers, can meet on a par, in a way, in a discursive setting. Then the Art Science Initiative at the University of Chicago is very much oriented towards the teaching and to initiating collaboration on the within the schools. And they interestingly have something called the Graduate Collaboration Grants, where there's a fund from which they give money to teams of researchers from different schools. So there's always somebody from the art school and then somebody from another faculty within the university who are working on projects together. And that is, of course, a way to initiate dialogues and sustain those dialogues over extended periods of time. There's quite good documentation of some of these projects on their website. The National University of Singapore has a new art science residency program where they identify schools within the university beforehand that are interested to receive artists, and they then deal with social issues, or there's one that's focused on water something, I can't remember. So very quite specific topics. And the question then is to artists to apply for specific places within the university. So they come into an environment where they are actually already received as welcome guests. The University of Western Australia hosts the Symbiotica lab that Jens Hauser knows a lot more about. And it's basically a place where artists can work in a biotechnological academic lab and explore their projects in this kind of very serious university context.
It's a medical school. In fact a medical school.
And then as historical examples, and there are many more of these, I just wanted to point to the computation centers at the University of Madrid and the University of Sydney, because both of those had artists-in-residence programs in the late 1960s and early 70s. When they had their first computer equipment, and there was a strong interest from artists to get their hands on that material. So they actually created these residency programs, which did lead to both artistic and technological innovation. So I think it's interesting to look at that aspect as well, which is even stronger in the corporate artist-in-residence programs. I have just a list of some of these, some famous ones, like the program of the of Bell Labs, which in the 60s was instrumental for the experiments in art and technology, EAT, coming about, and the Nine Evenings in art and theater being realized. Then the quite famous Xerox PARC pair, artist-in-residence program in the 80s and early 90s, which some of the people who are still famous media artists went through, like, for instance, Paul de Marinis. He spent a lot of time there. Then the Canon Art Lab in Tokyo, which throughout the 1990s produced really excellent work, artworks in the media art field, important interactive installations that came out of there. And in all of these cases, there's a very close tying in of the technological research and development agenda of those companies and the work that the artists are doing there. Again, one would have to look at the individual examples of how the mechanics of that collaboration between artists and engineers is managed, and what the, you know, how free the artists are in doing their work. But I think this is also, you know, as an outside reference point, it's important to think about this aspect as well. I would now like to just point to four artists' work, not because they are going to be future residents here, but because in their work it's possible to explain what different relations there can be, and these are just four examples, there can be between art and science. And I think that, you know, this then points to my argument that we have to be very specific when we think about artists and when we think about the scientific research environments that we bring them into. So Marco Pelyan, and I'm really just going to scan there that aspect. Here, examples of, down at the bottom you see the exhibition of the Arctic Perspective Initiative project that was in Dortmund last year. And at the top you see the macro lab, which was initiated in 1997. And the Arctic Perspective project, which is a big research project about the impact of climate change in the Arctic region. The Arctic Perspective project creates a research context for social, for meteorological, for technological and political sciences. Here the research is part of the artistic practice and the presentation. So there's, it's really, it's research as artistic practice. And it's art that enters into an engaged dialogue with scientific partners and messes deliberately and strategically with science. there are two of the publications about this project are on the table next door. There are some more books there as well. Those are my personal copies, so please don't steal them. But do take an opportunity to have a look in there, because just for the, in the coffee break, it might be interesting to get some more context on this. Just a second, this takes a moment. I put some really heavy images in here, so it takes ages to load. There we are. Seiko Mikami is a Japanese artist, and she's currently, I'm not even sure whether I'm supposed to show you this, but because it's a, but it's a bad projection, so you don't tell anybody. Seiko did this project called Molecular Informatics in the second half of the 90s. It's 97, 98. She presented it in different venues. And it works with eye tracking and projects the trace of the eye movement into a virtual model. And at the moment, they are working on a new version of this at YCAM in Yamaguchi, in the south of Japan, to premiere sometime at the beginning of next year. And Abe, the curator there, sent me a photograph, and it looks quite spectacular and a huge step over those 15 years in terms of the visual aesthetics. And on the left is a view of the Gravicells installation. The eye tracking informatics as a project relies on technical advances in eye tracking technology, which the project in fact serves to initiate. So there's a dialogue between the artistic endeavor and the scientific, the technological development. The result, however, is not an artistic exploration of the technology, but an aesthetic and philosophical reflection on human perception and human identity. So the goal in Seiko's work is not to illustrate the possibilities of the technology, but it's really, her interest is in how does human perception work, and how, what does it mean to experience a visual trace of my gaze, stuff like that. So the scientific and technological work here is ancillary to the artistic endeavor. Sabine Bitter and Helmut Weber, in their work, deal with architecture and urban settings and with the interaction with social, political, and historical contexts. On the left, there's an image of the exhibition that they did about a project in New Belgrade. And on the right, there's a more recent project which they did in Tokyo at Tokyo Wonder Site in the context of the Metabolism exhibition that's running there at the moment. Their research is at the same time based on factual and on aesthetic aspects, which they articulate in different graphic, photographic, and sculptural representations. And Jan-Peter Sontag. Sontag's works are often the result of extensive research into physical phenomena related to light, sound, electricity, and space. Together with his own team of technicians, so he runs a lab where the research is actually being done, and Jan-Peter is also an avid amateur scholar himself, amateur in the best sense of the word. So together with a team of technicians, Sontag studies these phenomena and develops technologies and installations video and sound works that exploit the natural properties of materials and dispositions. Scientific research here becomes a part of the artistic process. The artist draws on scientific knowledge, as others would draw on and expand historical, technical, or psychological experience. So it's really, it's the matter with which the artist works. This intensification, and that's just as a kind of a pointer again, this intensification of the relation between art and science is of course a topos of modernity. It's something that is not germane to the digital or electronic technologies, but it's something that is probably closely connected to an understanding of modernity, where art is placed into society with a particular role, which is why I think it's worth looking at the history of constructivism as a moment where that understanding is born. And then we have a historical lineage which could be drawn from the Bauhaus through the new Bauhaus, where Kepes worked after the Second World War, to the Center for Advanced Visual Studies that I mentioned earlier. In another discussion, somebody brought up the Hochschule für Gestaltung in Ulm recently, which might also be an interesting reference point for our discussions, but I don't know enough about them to bring that into the debate right now. To round off, I would just like to briefly introduce the two main focuses of my questions for our discussion. One is, I mentioned that already earlier, like if it is true that in the 20th century we are, like, if the understanding of what constitutes science and what constitutes knowledge and what's research, if that has changed within the 20th century, because the traditional paradigms, the kind of the pre-modern paradigms of knowledge, were undermined by both scientific findings and also a new understanding of the way in which science works, operates within society, then that coincides and maybe goes in parallel with a new understanding of what constitutes art. We have a radical shift of our understanding of art in the 20th century. And the hypothesis is that within the institutions and within the programs where art and scientific knowledge circulate, they are very often still strongly built on the 19th century model and a 19th century understanding of what their purpose is. So the question is whether the institutional settings and the way in which we bring artists, for instance, into the universities, actually up to speed. And this is also, you know, very much a question to my own thinking about this, is up to speed with the role that art and science have in society and the way in which they already operate in a practical sense. And the second aspect, the second question for me is to then get away from an understanding of the university as something that is a clearly formed body where professors guard the knowledge and kind of spread it out, as against artists who come in as aliens and they're kind of somehow going to mess it up a little bit. The university is an extremely heterogeneous body of people. It has a history. It has many different facets in its composition, both as a collective but also with all the individuals. And it has many different potentials. That's why I, you know, suggest this term of the heterotopos of the university. In the conversations that I've had here, sometimes, but maybe that might be my naivety, the university kind of is perceived as a homogeneous place when it isn't. And so I'm trying to think of how do I describe the university as this heterotopos, and what would be the role of art within such a much more fractured, much more open, maybe also more fluid understanding of the university. And that brings us then into the discussion also about the institutional makeup, because the question whether that fluidity is actually there, or whether a lot of the time it is really stalled in institutional issues, problems, structures, is a real one. And that's then also a question whether it might be necessary to really work on the institutional framework within which such an art program can run. You know, how much friction is inbuilt with institutional structures. Okay, here we are. This is my little introduction, and I don't know whether there are immediate responses now.
Get started with the notes of. Thank you very much. It's a very, very rich, and we're going to speak about this for at least two days, the rest of our lives. But you're speaking about artists, and you're speaking about art. Is there a difference there? Because why should we bring in artists? It's nice to help them out, of course. Huh? But are there artists to be being brought in, or is it art that we're interested in? Does that make sense to you, this distinction?
The distinction makes the distinction makes absolute sense for me, and it's it's probably the question between a more conceptual level and the practical level. My main ambition is to bring artists, because from my perspective, maybe that's my curatorial background, I think anything that art can be is what artists do. And it doesn't make sense to speak about art in a general sense when you're not speaking about the particular practice of specific artists, even individual works. Ulf?
Perhaps there's a difference between historical art and contemporary art. Because if you're dealing with contemporary art, it's difficult to avoid the artist. The living artist. Comparison what art historians do, they are dealing with art in this sense, which was produced in the past. And, yeah, for me, that's the main difference. Of course, it depends on the notion of art. Whether you are a systems theoretician who does not deal with individuals or something like that, or you, if you think the production is based on the production of individuals. Well, that's interesting to consider, that there are individuals that are constructing art, not perhaps for a system theoretical approach.
Yeah, so Pierre, my answer would be, you know, with the help of Ulf's injunction, that for me it's really very much about the practice, and it's about contemporary practice. We want to bring living artists into the program. But of course there is, you know, not least on the political level, where this program also has to be installed, there is also the more systematic question of what it means to bring art into a context like this. Because on that political level, faculties are also formed, and kind of long-term planning is happening. And also the role of the university within society, you know, all those big words, is being discussed. And I think that we need answers to that as well, but maybe not in the first instance. Yes.
Maybe there was a more subtlety in the distinction you wanted to make as a before. Is it when the artist has left, is there still art remaining as a structure? Even coming from system theory and so on, what is left when the artist has left, even if he's not dead? And the first hybrid art category, Golden Leica, that we gave as a jury, for example, was not given to an artwork. And I mean, I think we also shared this experience recently in the Vida jury in Madrid, when we are not talking about artworks, but about art projects more and more. And these projects remain, even it cannot be bound to a specific work. And the first example of the Golden Leica at the Ars Electronica being given, for example, to Symbiotica, was a strategic position to say we give it to an art project as a structure and not an artwork, even if this art structure produces artworks. And it was very symbolic in the sense that it was compared to the Linux being awarded by, I don't know, was it Interactive or whatever, but it was also a kind of distinction to be made between an artwork and an art project, which inflects on an infrastructure as such, as a project and as a network. And at what degree we can build at the university kind of artist-like structure in terms of system theory, which is remaining even if the artist coming through like a water boiler are exchangeable in a certain way. I felt this was the subtlety behind your question.
Well, it's a question that people ask themselves. I mean, and there are strategies out there that go for one or go for, as you mentioned. That's,
I also found interesting the idea that the link between art and science perhaps is based on modernity, because it is often said that modernity is differentiation. What would mean that art and science are differentiated, typically, but there are counterexamples like those that you have mentioned, constructivism, Bauhaus, and things like that. In sociology, we often say postmodernism is de-differentiation. And perhaps there are two different kinds of links between art and science in these two contexts, or these two historical contexts.
Jan, bitte.
I've got the impression that this de-differentiation, if it takes place at all, only takes place in the art world and not in the science world. Because it gets more and more difficult to even understand somebody of the same discipline who's doing similar things but in a separate branch. It's very, very hard, and the differentiation goes on and on. Mm-hmm. So I would deeply doubt this assumption that there is really a de-differentiation between
art and science.
But what is with mode one and mode two science? Because that's no fantasy to say that mode two type of science has spread over the last 10 or 20 years. Or isn't that the case? Mode one, science being disciplinary, and mode two, science being more open to other disciplines, including art. That also happens, I think.
There's a topic which is related to that and which you have been listing as the second point, as the heterotopos and the epistemology coming together in a certain way. And very often when I try to bring artists in contact with scientists, especially in the natural science, my experience is that I'm very frustrated to learn that these scientists, which I rate very highly in terms of their professional background, that they lack epistemology more than the artists do. And then, the question of epistemology is not to assume that a scientist necessarily has an epistemological background because he is within this practice. It's really not true. And I think this is something which artists also can bring. And this, it comes back to the modernism or the differentiation or differentiation related to modernism or postmodernism, in how far it involves a self-acknowledgement that we need to know about our own history of science when we practice this, and this can come through this interchange also with other disciplines. But there is a lack of epistemology even in the natural science, which is very clear. And very often this comes up and it gets really revealed as a litmus test when an artist comes in and drops in questions about the context of what you're actually doing as a specialist.
And when you, I think I understand what you're saying, and I'm thinking of cases where I've been sort of experiencing things like that. And usually what happens when you bring that up in a university context or a department or something like that is that very soon you get into a discussion about time. So, and I have it from both the Geisteswissenschaften and the Naturwissenschaften. I mean, the econometricians will say that, well, that's very good, but I need 4 years full time to get my students into the world of their models. And if I don't get that, I will not be able to produce what I'm supposed to produce. And actually, the funny thing is that was linguists say too. If you want to get into a language, I need the time. I need these people for completely immersed in that. So on a very practical level, it leaves no time for doing it. And this is how do you discuss this?
But the question I wanted to bring up with this isn't epistemology the very basis and the very condition of an interdisciplinary exchange? That was the question I wanted to ask.
Yeah, it is. No.
I don't think so.
I think that it's useful, but it's just one of the ways in which you can enter into such a dialogue. Because it can also be a very, let me say, practical shared interest that people have, that they discover that they are looking at the same object from different angles. You know, they speak about the weather, as in Marco Pilian's case, but from very different perspectives. And it's not necessary that they kind of have an understanding of the epistemological context within which they individually approach this. I think for us strategically it's important. It's my interest to explore that. Bitte.
I would also say that it's important not only to talk about when you're talking about structures that bring together art and sciences, let it be in a university or elsewhere, that it's important to look at the practical knowledge of the people actually doing the program, because always you have I think the structures mostly represent the power structures of the university or well, the political level that made it possible to form that institution. But what is really done on the practical level differs very much in the programs. And I would say that because you have very different hopes and works of and ways of working, both on the, at the artist's level and also on the scientist's level, it's useful to have a very flexible structure. Mm-hmm. And also, I think...
Can you give an example of what you're thinking of?
Well, for example, you have got... I'm missing the name, but you have that program, I think Auftrag für die Kunst or something like this, where actually...
Neue Auftraggeber.
Yeah, that's it.
Which was really...
Which I thought was a very interesting project because you didn't have a curator showing some artworks to people who actually in the end were financing it because of because they pay the taxes, etc. But could demand a special or articulate a special. Problem they were experiencing in their context, in the very local context or also at a university. And then it's more the task of a curator to bring artists and people together. So it's not only, so if you would, I think that this is really, I think this is important, or this leads to the point of the practical knowledge in a program, because if you look on, only look at from the artist's perspective, well, they have got very different programs, have got programs, or they need help for 3 months or for a year for a project. This differs really much. And if you only look at the interest of the institutions, they are quite specific, but the point is to bring them together in a productive and positive way for all of them.
Nouveau patron, non? C'était nouveau patron.
C'est François Hertz. François Hertz de la Fondation.